This is an ABC podcast.
State and territories will be moving to put a moratorium on evictions of persons as a result of financial distress if they are unable to meet their commitments. And so there will be a moratorium on evictions for the next 6 months under those rental arrangements.
There's a question that's been keeping hundreds of thousands of Australians awake at night this week. It's not about their health, but it is about the virus. They've been wondering how the hell they can afford to keep their homes. I'm Stephen Stockwell.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre. And today on The Signal, mortgage freezes, rental freezes and eviction bans. The once unthinkable steps that could save Australia from a housing crisis.
So here we are at the start of week three, making this pod from our homes, three suburbs apart, which is not something anyone predicted even a week before it started to happen.
Yeah, even though we might have seen it coming if we had really been watching some of the countries that got the virus first. Because even though this is playing out differently everywhere, those countries can be a kind of crystal ball, right? Like not a perfect one, but not terrible either.
Yeah, and at least for a week now, if you were to look over at, I don't know, let's say New York, you would have seen a lot of people who are about to miss a rental payment. And guess what? Australia is coming up to the exact same thing.
Yeah, so last night we heard a few big changes from the government, some to do with the size of gatherings, but the one we want to talk about is to do with this six-month eviction moratorium.
Right, so basically it means if you're a tenant of any kind, you can't get booted out until sometime in late September or maybe even October. And that's going to be a huge relief to millions of people who've been sweating on exactly this or something like it. But it's also not a whole solution because as far as we can tell from that first announcement, renters will still owe the accumulated rent once that 6 months is up unless they negotiate otherwise with the owner of the property.
Yeah, the thing is though, we're not the first country trying to work this out. Like we said, renters in New York have been in exactly the same boat.
Whereabouts in New York do you live?
I live in Brooklyn and Crown Heights.
Okay. And I guess we only have a dim sense over here what the situation is in New York, but it sounds pretty serious. What about where you are? What restrictions are there on your movement? How much has your life changed?
Well, I don't have a job anymore, and I had two.
That's Serena, and in case you've missed it, which would be understandable with everything that's been happening here, New York has been one of the hardest hit parts of the US. Its health system, its economy, everything. And Serena was working in bars, so her income dried up more or less straight away.
And so they, like, laid all of us off, just so we, like, it wasn't really, like, mean or anything. It was so we can collect unemployment. The government has asked us to not leave our houses unless absolutely necessary. And the only things that are open are essential places. So like grocery stores, banks, yeah, the pharmacies. Yeah. I did happen to go for a really long bike ride today and the streets were pretty bare for New York. And I rode on many open roads. Definitely a different vibe than it usually is.
This was last week too, and the New York she's describing is still more restricted than what we're seeing here. So that means they reached their housing crisis first.
Yeah, and they felt it too, because New York rent is famously high.
It really depends, because since I rely on tips, some weeks are good, some weeks are bad. But I think like I'm trying to do the math in my head really quick. Like, I would say like half. Like a round half is
wow.
Rent.
Okay, that's quite a bit.
Maybe a little bit less than half, like 40%.
Okay.
Yeah, rent is really expensive. And I actually live in, for what I have, it's really good price. Because I have a lot of space. I have a backyard and a front stoop and like two floors. It's kind of like a dream, honestly.
And when you lost your job, how worried were you that you wouldn't be able to make rent?
So I knew I was going to lose my job. The week before I lost my job, I was like trying to mentally prepare for it and like think about money And I was like crying every night. It was very stressful. Because I mean, at that point, there was no, my thought of like, oh, what is the government going to do for us was not a thought. It was just like, how am I going to make this rent? I knew that my last paycheck would be almost my rent. So I would I have 1 month's rent, but considering that, like, I will have no income until the foreseeable future, it's like, is that rent money or is that like survival money, you know?
So while all this is going on, New York passes a mortgage freeze, which means homeowners don't have to make repayments on their loans if they can't. But at that point, renters hadn't been given the same deal. So rather than give up the house that they love, Serena and her three housemates came up with this kind of Hail Mary plan.
We called a house meeting and talked about our finances and what that looked like for us, and like if we were all able to pay a month, and like what we wanted to do if we were going to. A friend of mine shared a email template to send to landlords, which I really enjoyed and I think is really well done. And we all looked at it and we were really excited. But then we, so we also talked about how specifically our landlord is a Black woman of the neighborhood who this is like her family home that she inherited. We realized like we couldn't just send her this aggressive email and be like, we really can't, we're sorry, and like, thank you for understanding. So we all decided that we would like reach out to her. So we FaceTimed her actually that day. She was like, I have nothing to do because no one is really doing anything. So we sat down with her over FaceTime.
So what was your pitch to her when you sat down with her and, you know, you made a more gentle case, I suppose?
We kind of were like, so we want to make sure that we're taking care of each other just because this time is extremely stressful. And we want to just communicate with you our situation. So we told her that we all don't have jobs anymore. And then we were like, this is the deal. Like each of us have money for 1 month. And then all the other money is survival money. Groceries, bills, and we just want to be honest with you that like we don't have any other income coming in. And she decided that we should pay all of April, and then she was like, we can just like forget about May, like you just won't pay May, and then we'll come back to it in June. So we were like extremely lucky, and we all like after that call we were like so thankful that we decided to talk with her first than just send the email.
I mean, that went pretty well.
Yeah, and it's exactly the kind of thing Scott Morrison is hoping will happen here.
And we need landlords and tenants to sit down and come up with arrangements that enable them to get through this crisis.
But an eviction freeze doesn't necessarily avert a housing crisis.
These are people who have had very busy, productive work lives, and in many cases, their entire industry has been essentially banned.
That's Dan Ziffer. He's a business reporter for the ABC.
Have people already started to lose their homes?
So the process to get evicted takes a while, for good reason. You know, you can't just be capriciously kicking people out for no cause. But some people are failing to make the rent. What I'm hearing a lot is from share houses. Here we're talking about three or four people living together, and one or two of them might have lost their jobs, lost their income, and they're moving out, perhaps moving back with their parents or moving to a different situation and leaving behind a household that now has to service a much larger rental payment from a smaller number of people. So, you know, these issues are going to snowball very quickly until a larger situation, a larger solution can be worked out.
Okay, so that's the nature of the problem, but what about the size of it? Obviously, it's still unfolding, but what can we know or what can we guess about the scale of this problem?
At the moment, we're talking about the income crisis, people having absolutely no money. Very soon, we'll be focused on the rental crisis because one in three Australians get the roof over their head by renting it. We're talking about 3 million homes, 8 million people. So it's about a third of the population, probably a touch more if you consider the working population. Now, already we're talking about over 1 million people being added to the unemployment queue, potentially up to two, we really aren't going to know for some time. These people are going to be without income from now, pretty much, or from a week or two when their entitlements run out, for maybe a month or two.
So for the countries that have beaten us to this, it's been a mix of mortgage freezes, rental freezes, and the same kind of eviction moratoriums Australia just announced.
Look, this is all hard stuff. If you had said this stuff a couple of months ago, this would be radical economic thought. But what we're looking at really, when you look at places like the UK and Germany, which are comparable countries, larger countries, but comparable, is that they've essentially called a rent freeze and in some cases banned evictions for 6 months. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to buy the economy some breathing room. They're trying to say, this is an extraordinary situation. Let's keep everything in place. And not only does that take the angst out of the situation, people don't need to worry about being evicted. They don't need to try and find a new property in this precarious time where we want everyone to be indoors. But it also buys the economic coffins and time to try and work out a system for a soft landing, for a recovery.
Okay, so we're following a pretty well-worn path with the eviction moratorium. And even before last night, we did have a mortgage freeze in place for the overwhelming majority of Australian home loans.
So Australia's big four banks are, in descending order of size, Commonwealth Bank, Westpac, ANZ and NAB. And all of them have essentially said to their mortgage customers, you can have a 6 month pause on your mortgage. Now, the interest will keep accruing, but obviously it's at a historically low level at the moment, but you won't need to make repayments. Now, in 3 months' time, if people take up this option, they'll check in with them, see how they're going, and they can take it on for another 3 months. So this is a really good chance to give the whole system some breathing room. So those landlords who are perhaps a bit overextended or have lost their jobs, they don't need to keep making mortgage repayments, you know, and as a result, they don't need to do a rush sale of the property. They can just stop paying the mortgage for 6 months.
So we've got the eviction moratorium, we have a mortgage freeze. The only thing we don't have is a rental freeze. And as things stand, there's no guarantee the hold-on mortgages will be passed on to tenants unless they negotiate something directly with their landlord.
Right, because initially you look at an eviction moratorium and think that kind of supersedes a rental freeze, right? Surely people can just not pay and they'll still have a place to live. But the thing about a moratorium is that it runs out. And as soon as it does, anyone behind on rent might still have to pay up.
Unless they've already worked something out, like Serena.
Right.
And people have started to do that.
We are seeing individual owners lowering rents for their tenants on a case-by-case basis, but it's really ad hoc. Do you have any sense for how widespread that is?
It's really hard to tell. The issue with residential tenancy is that it's 8 million people living in 3 million households, and most landlords have only got one or two properties. They're not big owners. You know, you're not dealing with a huge corporation that's got thousands and thousands of properties. You're generally dealing with quite literally mum and dad investors. So, yes, people have been going to their tenants and saying, hey, I know times are tough. We can accept lower rent or we can give you a rent holiday. But as I mentioned, many of these landlords, they're servicing mortgages too. So as a result, a lot of landlords, they can't wear a loss in rent and they certainly can't wear giving their renters 6 months off. So we're going to need a much larger solution for this. The mortgage pausing might be part of that solution, particularly if it's linked to giving a holiday to the renters who are, you know, being housed by that mortgage. So this is a linked problem. Everyone is part of this and everyone will be part of the solution. Landlords are going to have to wear some loss, that's for certain, but they're not going to be asked to give up everything.
And obviously the goal here is keeping people in homes for the usual reasons and because during a public health emergency, it's an even more acute need. But there's an economic goal here too. Dan says if we can't pause the housing market for the next 6 months and we start to see owners run into the kind of trouble that forces them to sell, it could tank the housing market altogether.
if we start to see people unable to make rent, and as a result, we start to see people being forced to sell properties, to have foreclosures and mortgagee sales, that's going to cause housing prices to fall very quickly. And our economy is really predicated. We're on the back, not of the sheep like we were kind of 50, 80 years ago. We're on the back of housing. If there is a crash in housing prices, it will doom our economy much longer than the 6 months, a year, 18 months that we're talking about.
So we need the housing market in okay shape if the economy is ever going to bounce back quickly after this is over. But if you ask Dan, it is never going to look quite the same ever again.
The hardest bit about this is that we're talking about housing as an asset. What this crisis has revealed very strongly, and I think people knew beforehand anyway, is that housing is more than an asset. It's where people live. So whilst we've had a lot of tax laws and negative gearing and capital gains tax that have essentially caused people who have money to want to buy more properties because it's a good thing to do to reduce your tax and to make more money, we're realizing pretty quickly that that falls down a bit as a kind of moral argument in a situation like this, because people need housing at the most utilitarian level. You know, everyone needs one unit of housing per person, and they're not spread well across society. So, you know, it's fine to have housing as an asset. I think the longer term discussion that's going to come out of this is that are all of the advantages we've given generally to people who already own houses to go and buy a second, third, fourth, and fifth one, are they really fair? And is that good for society when we've seen in this crisis that housing is more than just stock that goes up and down and you get a dividend off it? You know, it is something that's very central to people's lives.
So that's it for The Signal for today. And if you're listening to us and enjoying us, leave us a review, rate. You can also ask questions in that section as well. So if you're on an app that lets you review, ask us a question. We'll suss it out.
And we'll catch you soon. Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.